This episode is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. And are you ready to chart your path to financial independence? Well, get started with Portfolio Analyst by Interactive Brokers. Portfolio Analyst lets you consolidate, track, and analyze all of your financial accounts in a single powerful dashboard. And the best part? It's free for everyone. No IBKR account required. Plan for your future with their new retirement planner tailored to your preferences and market assumptions. Unlock deep portfolio insights with comprehensive risk assessments. Drill into specific metrics like portfolio holdings, allocation, and performance. Track your performance against more than 300 benchmarks. Plus, manage your portfolios confidently with GIPS verified returns. Sign up for a portfolio analyst for free at ibkr.com/freep-a. Because the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The disciplined investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Ringing in the new year as we look back to look ahead. And it's that time again. Yes, it's the parade of guests from 2024. All this and much more on episode number 902 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Wow, what a year. Yes. I mean, how could we complain? Markets cooperated. Okay, until the very end, there was some mishaps, a little bit of change of leadership for a few minutes there, but it seemed to come back in the last day of the year. The first day of the year, I should say, the first couple of days of the year, there was this crazy movement, and then all of a sudden, back to the races again with the same names really plowing ahead. Markets did, yes, cooperate. The best part is that we had some really smart people here on the show as guests to share their knowledge with us. That's why I do this, right? One of the reasons I love doing this. I love talking to you. I love the back and forth. I love the camaraderie, the relationships, the friendships, all the things that we form here all the time. But one of the things I really get out of this is that I have the opportunity to spend time each and every week with some of the best people in the business talking about what we all love, right? All love about finance and investing and all the things related to markets here and around the world. But one of the things that you need to do, and this is on a regular basis, you need to step back. You need to take a breath every so often. We need to reflect on what's going on, what we got right, what we got wrong, what we could do better, what we want to change. Learn from our mistakes and our successes. That's what I do. Here at Horowitz & Company, we're always learning. It's not a static process. And even at the greatest of great, you know, firms out there, the hedge funds, they're learning on a regular basis as well because the market is fluid. And what we need to understand is that things change. And as things change, we need to change along with it in order to put our best foot forward to do what we do, which is to make money moving forward for our future. And that's what we did. We put together this show each and every year. It's the parade of guests, we call it. Snippets on all sorts of things, from conversations that range from the Fed all the way through AI. Think of it as a cheat sheet, crib notes on what you need to know. And I want you to listen. I want you to listen to this show, not as a best of, but as a way to learn, because you're going to hear from the beginning of the year throughout the middle and end of the year. Our good friend Ryan Radisky put together this in a good amount of time. He spends on it annually. And even though we are already in a new year for 2025, it's as good of time as any to spend, as we call it, sharpening the saw. You know, this is the time of the year that we make those resolutions. This is the time of year that the parking lots at the local gyms are crowded. And what happens, in February, March? There's plenty of spots available. But we're not going to have that here. We're going to continue the process of learning. We're going to continue this process of making sure that we have the best information available to you at all times to help you through your journey of learning, of experiencing, of sharpening your saw to get you towards that future you where you're going to be very happy about, well, simply financial security and financial success and financial independence. Now, before we go any further, I want to talk for a moment, take a quick break and ask you an important question. The question is, are you ready to put your predictions to the test? Because with Interactive Brokers Forecast Trader, you can trade your views on key economic and climate indicators. Simply answer yes or no. That's it. Will the year-over-year change in the U.S. Consumer Price Index exceed 2.5% in March of 2025? Or will the average U.S. temperature in 2024 be greater than 54 degrees? If you agree, well, you simply buy a yes contract. If you don't, you buy a no. It's that easy. Contracts cost 2 to 99 cents, and correct predictions earn $1 at settlement. And incorrect ones, well, they settle at zero. Forecast contracts are commission-free, plus earn 3.83% annual percentage yield, APY, on your investment with an interest-like incentive coupon. And new accounts get USD $3 to trade forecast contracts. Visit IBKR.com/forecast and make your predictions today. So without any further ado, let's get it on with the parade of guests from 2024.
Episode 850, Skate to the Puck with Sam Burns.
Skate to where the puck is going, not where it is.
Oh, yeah, no, that's absolutely right, that you have to kind of look forward. The stock market is always trying to look ahead, and that's why people are often confused by, you know, they get some sort of economic news, and then they see the stock market kind of seemingly do the opposite, and then they say, well, why would that be? Well, yeah, it's because they're looking for what's coming next, not what just happened. And often, you know, the market and the economy is also kind of cyclical, and, you know, a piece of bad news comes followed by a piece of good news. And so there's a tendency to over extrapolate whatever you've seen just recently.
Episode 851, Opportunistic Value with Vitaly Katsenolson.
So I'm trying to make a distinction between cheap and undervalued.
Right.
Cheapness is something you can usually see right in front of you, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So I want to make this distinction that there is a significant difference between cheapness and undervaluation.
So it seems to me that there'd be a better way to call what you do, because if everybody, most people think value versus growth, and value is this versus that. It's almost like you're looking for opportunistic.
Episode 852, AIAIO with John Pugliano.
I talked about decision support systems, which is what we're talking about with regenerative AI. I mean, I see all this becoming very productive in the future when it's not just a matter of you're chatting with something, but when you can take an expert system, you know, the greatest surgeons in the world, you combine all their knowledge, and then when you're training new surgeons or new doctors, or even when someone's in an operating room, they can be wearing some kind of an augmented reality system where as they're actually performing the operation, or while they're assisted by a robot that's performing the operation, they can see real time what's going on and compare it to the combined data of all these surgeons, you know, that we've put in the data systems.
And Danielle DiMartino Booth.
The reason that markets got so darn pissed off at Waller's remarks is because he said we can be really slow and measured. You know, we can just do a quarter of a percentage point at a time. We can take things really slowly mm-hmm. in 2024. But you're asking the question that you're asking the only question markets want the answer to. And that's, for the love of God, when do we get to zero? I don't want to know anything else.
Right.
I don't want to know about measured. I don't want to know about, I joked about it on Twitter this morning. I'm like, rodents of unusually large size. People want to know about unusually large rate cuts that are going to get us to the zero bound quickly, for God's sake. That's all you're good for, Fed. And as soon as you get to the zero bound, then you can relaunch quantitative easing and we can really have a party.
Episode 853, Perma Bear Night with Tim Knight.
What's a perma bear anyway? What does that mean?
I think, you know, most people would agree a perma bear is someone who is always declaring like, this is it. This is the top. Everything's going to fall from here. The past, 15 years, it's been pretty much a disaster to be a bear. Almost any stock you buy, and certainly if it's like an Apple or an NVIDIA or a Meta, you just buy it and you forget it and you do great. So a perma bear on the whole is very kind of skeptical, discerning, critical, and looking for why everybody else is wrong. The funny thing about contrarianism is that everyone thinks they're a contrarian, which by definition is impossible.
Episode 854, McClellan's Tidal Forces with Tom McClellan.
Liquidity start to dry up. The algos are not the main source of liquidity. They're marginal, eating around the edges kind of traders. But the banking system is what the provider of the liquidity. And when the banking system starts to dry up, it shows up in the advanced decline statistics. It shows up in the junk bonds performing more poorly than the stock market does. And those are tidal forces that just can't be nibbled away at by any algos. They just don't have enough to overpower that.
Episode 855, Curzio's Snappy Idea with Frank Curzio.
There is one company I'll give you that you're going to think I'm absolutely crazy that I think is a steal right now.
What?
Snap.
Down 32% after their earnings. Nice.
I told you. This is a company that I would be buying right now because their AI is actually going to make a ton of money for them. Almost every analyst, I mean, even JP Morgan raised their EBITDA estimates by 80% for the full year. So they lowered estimates for Q1, but they said all of this because of the cuts are going to result in this massive amount of money they're going to be printing. And when I looked under the hood, and this whole thing about advertising being bad, it was wrong. They have this new program, it's Snapchat Plus, where it's an extra revenue stream. They have 7 million users where they can use all these AI technologies to have pictures and stuff like that. My daughter uses it. She loves it. And they have 400 million users. I mean, you're going to see 25%. They only have 7 million right now. There's a good chance you're going to see 20-25% sign up for it.
Episode 856, The ETF Architect with Wesley Gray.
Let's say you wanted to start an ETF and you wanted to call it Andrew's Awesome ETF, but you don't want to deal with all the compliance, legal, trading, and just the mountains of BS that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
You're just like, hey, can I go buy a shovel from Wes and his team over there? That's the other component of ETF business we do. But specifically focused on the Alpha Architect side, in that portion in particular, we do... it's just, they're called factors. And we focus on value and momentum factors and value.
Well, those are diametrically opposed.
Yes. Yes. They're totally different, two religions, but we like them both. And as you're probably aware, like the ETF is a tax efficient way to deliver these strategies that have a lot more turnover. Just through the ETF, you can basically avoid capital gain distributions. So we do all of them.
Episode 857, An Options Primer with Larry McMillan.
Okay, so Black and Scholes and Merton were three professors at MIT back in the early 70s, and they decided to create a model for valuing options. And eventually, it depends a lot on what distribution you use, you know. So they eventually settled on the log normal distribution, which actually caused Merton to drop out of the... But it became so much the standard. And so it was very useful. And then Fisher Black went to Goldman Sachs, Myron Scholes stayed in academia, and the model won the Nobel Prize for Economics probably 20 years later, but it still did win the model for economics. And if you look in even in the United States tax code now, it's the agreed upon way to value options in certain situations where you need to value options for tax purposes.
Episode 858, Tool Sharpening with Steve Sanders.
So the first planning tool that we put in place was allocations, which basically you set up what you want your allocations to be by asset and sub-asset class. And we tell you how you're doing against those goals. And the next piece of this is our retirement planner, where it takes all your assets, you put in a bunch of assumptions on how long you're going to be working, what you think your rate of returns are going to be, what you think inflation is going to be, your retirement plans and everything else. You put it all in there and it shows you the cash flows, and it tells you, oh, you also put in there when you think it will be the end of your life.
Oh,
and
that's morbid.
Right. It's morbid, but necessary.
Yeah, I get it. Right.
Because what this planner is going to tell you is, do I have enough cash flow for the rest of my life?
Episode 859, One-Sided with Thomas Thornton.
I think the hardest thing to do when you're a long short hedge fund is to be able to manage both sides, especially in a market like this, because I will tell you, it's been incredibly hard finding anything that works on the short side. Yeah. It's been very hard. And I have a bit of a value bent. And so I've been buying a lot of energy, which honestly are up, which is good. And I think energy still has a lot of value there. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to find places where others aren't, and I'm shorting things where people are crowded. It's not easy.
Episode 860, Bitcoin Blasphemy with Paul Barron.
I'm going to say this on your podcast. Uh-oh. I don't say this too often.
Uh-oh.
I believe there will be another Bitcoin. They are going to have to fork Bitcoin. Now, this is like blasphemy in the Bitcoin community. If I said this on my show, first of all, people would lose it. You know, they don't understand the limitations of what Bitcoin, if we want to be able to use this technology in a different way for payments, or other than maybe cross-border payments and moving assets, you know, large amount of assets, one or two times, three or four times a year, not weekly or monthly or any of that kind of stuff. But I think they'll have to fork it. And there's a lot of the original developers that now are believing that same thing. And there's a big struggle going on between the six houses of the, you know, almost like Game of Thrones, you know, kind of activity that's happening in the developer community.
Episode 861, Size Matters with Paul Merriman.
There's a fellow who joined our organization, and we are all unpaid volunteers, totally. He built what we call best-in-class ETFs. So, by the way, that's his best-in-class, defined by the size, the expense, the turnover, the quality, the momentum. You're right about the ETFs. That is the right place to be for the long term, because, you know, we're teaching people to do something that we think they can do on their own, and that is to buy and hold. Not all of them can do that.
Episode 862, DE Diversification with Tom Nelson.
We obviously want to avoid diversification rather than diversification, right? Yeah. So too many things together can ultimately, you know, too much of a good thing can ultimately be a bad thing. But we spend a lot of time looking at various scenarios and ensuring that, one, our portfolios are aligned with what we think is the most likely scenarios, right? Of economic growth, of what the Federal Reserve does, of geopolitical risks, although those are super difficult to model against.
Episode 863, Olive Pitts with David Geffen.
So how then do the people listening here right now discern what is information that they can bite into without worrying there's a pit in the middle of that olive?
Yeah, no, that's and that's not easy at all to figure out. And, you know, some of the things you look at is, you know, who are they citing as their sources? Do they say there are any sources? Do they name them on the record? First of all, you know, the idea with anonymous sources that you're not supposed to just use those willy-nilly to start with. When you're dealing with people who are randomly posting things on Twitter and TikTok and that kind of thing, you know, where are they saying, what are they asserting? Where are they getting their information? information from, because, you know, a lot of these people assert something to be true, and big smart minds can be, you know, presumably caught up in this kind of thing where they either believe because they want to, or just because they don't have the right kind of filter, that somebody with, you know, a random name and 19 numbers after their handle is citing, you know, actual information.
Episode 864, Robbie's Matrix with Robbie Miles.
Yeah, one of my favorite films, by the way. So the obesity theme has been really the star of the show in healthcare. And actually, in some ways, we got it a little bit wrong by exiting too early, one of those things where valuation discipline can be a pain. But the more we learn about this theme, the more really it's just incredible the implications of these drugs are, in the sense they don't even just stop obesity. They sort of they seem to temper many addictions, really. But we're trying to be we have found a company that's not one of the two behemoths.
Episode 865, Retirement Secrets and Mistakes with Steve Selindat.
The more you use the approach in the Secrets book, the more income you'll have when you retire. I started using this approach, believe it or not, back in the 70s. When I was 25, I got what was left of my college fund and all the money I had put away as a kid when I was driving trucks and lumber yards and teaching people how to water ski and mowing lawns, all that stuff that I gave my dad to invest for me, because he insisted that I do that. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. you know, he left me enough to put gas in the boat, you know, yeah. That's about how. And when at 25, that all came back to me in the form of a whole slew of stock certificates.
Episode 866, Dismal Science with John Williams.
You know, you can find a way to calculate the CPI this way, we can probably find more money for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That was the message. And they changed. And the first thing they hit, it's key to many things, is the consumer price index, very specifically cost of living adjustment. And what they did instead of they started with the housing numbers, housing costs. And instead of measuring the actual cost of owning a house, which is the way it had been, they revamped it to a category called homeowners equivalent rent. The government would estimate what a homeowner would rent his house to himself for, and then how much he would increase that rent on himself each year.
Episode 867, The Right Seasoning with Tia Muratovic.
I can see the seasonal trend still, and you're completely right. Now we have all these algo traders, etc. And actually, when I was looking at the S&P mini future, it's also very profound that the S&P mini future has also a strong seasonality intraday. So there are not just the seasonal trends during the year that I was now telling you about. There are also big seasonal trends intraday, intraweek, intramonth on different instruments. And you would assume that, of course, because so many people are trading the same pattern, that the pattern disappears, but that is actually not true. They're still here.
Episode 868, Frank Fricancurzio.
SPACs only work if you have the retail investor there that you could F. Like you really,
yep.
Can I say it? I really yep. want to say it. But
screw
it. But
screw.
I will say it. But, you know, we really screw them. And time and time again, you see this. Like, they're such at a disadvantage, and it pisses me off. Even in a financial newsletter business where I'm in, right? Everyone's a guru. Everyone's great. You know, some people aren't even writing their newsletters. You know, it's crazy. I'm not, like, tearing apart people in my industry. Can't defend themselves. But this is personal to me. This is my life. I grew up in this. And when I see people getting screwed over, it really pisses me off.
When we say screwed, you mean they're getting, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's a good thing. Yeah. So, and you know, it's not just SPACs. It's everything else. I mean, look, you know, they say like they're going after crypto because they want to help people or whatever. You know, a lot of people made a lot of money in crypto and still making money in crypto, right? Yep. Crypto's doing pretty well.
Episode 869, Hedge Fund Strategies with Thomas Thornton.
I've been short Tesla for a while. My average base cost basis is around 240. I covered a little in our fund around 140 ahead of earnings. I should have covered it all. I added back the day after, and then it went a little higher. So I'm I'm fine. I'm not, you know, necessarily, you know, underwater in this, but I look at it as it's getting desperate now because all the fundamentals are starting to weaken. They've been weakening for the last year. Earnings per share, margins, revenues, cash flow is basically, you know, we're going to have a negative cash flow for the next year.
Episode 870, Let's Retire Rich with Michael Johnston.
You're getting over the long term, you're getting in the neighborhood of like a 3-4% annual return on this money that you're forced to set aside, which, okay, that's not terrible, but I would do much better if I had been able to, instead of setting this money into Social Security, and I'm going to receive more than I pay in, just to be clear, but it's a pretty dismal return that I'm going to get over the long term. So I don't know of any rational person who would look at this and say, yes, I would love to get a 2-3% over the long term. No, give me the money. Let me invest it myself. And I'll get, you know, 6-8% return that you can get from the stock market or from a diversified portfolio.
Episode 871, AI Deep Dive with Ross Gerber.
All this technology came from autonomous driving and video games from NVIDIA and people like Tesla and Elon. And this all started with GPUs, which were running graphics for video games, which then they realized was super good for autonomous driving because it could analyze the video from the cameras from the cars. Mm-hmm. In 2016, when we bought a ton of NVIDIA stock at $14, which is making me and my clients really happy right now. Mm-hmm. It was because we saw the CES presentation on autonomous driving with NVIDIA and Tesla. And Tesla used NVIDIA chips from the beginning. That's why Tesla's buying all NVIDIA chips now. It was always built on that architecture.
Episode 872, Money for Nothing with Jim Bruce.
Money creation back then was pittance compared to what was,
really was
compared to what happened during COVID. That was it's absurd. We're still dealing with it.
That, you know, that is fascinating to think. It all seems so quaint, honestly. Like, you know, they held rates at 1% for a few years in 01, 02, 03, 04. You know, Don Cohn, and this is like sort of totally happened again to me in 2020. You know, he talked about 2000. I was like, well, in 2004, you know, you guys were too easy. That was like the peak of mortgage issuance in the U.S. You know, a lot of people think the housing bubble was in like 5, 6, 7, but it was like, it was really a lot earlier that these kind of no-doc loans and everything exploded.
Episode 873, Evolutionary Trading with Steve Sanders.
We are playing with the AI, you know, in every area, right? And I think it's going to be more evolutionary than revolutionary. So, you know, in every area, in customer service, you know, getting the right answers to our clients, marketing, being able to better find the right channels, trading tools, being able to have predictive models. But I just don't think any of this, you know, is going to be the breakthrough announcement that's going to change the world in a day. I think it's gradually going to change over time. Some things are going to work very well, and, you know, we'll double down on the investment there. And some things are going to be failures and not work at all.
Yeah, so, it's interesting because I think a lot of people believe that this is, you put it really well, evolutionary, not revolutionary. It may be revolutionary, but it's going to take a while to get to the point.
Episode 874, Greatest of All Time with Jim Rogers.
Most markets are either at or near all-time highs. Mm-hmm. China's had a problem because of the COVID virus and because of a gigantic real estate bubble which popped. But there are very few other markets around the world that are down. Yes, Uzbekistan. I've been investing in Uzbekistan for its historic reasons. But Andrew, there are very, very few markets that are even down, much less depressed.
Yeah.
Japan, which we mentioned before, Japan was down for 35 years. That's not a typo. 35 years. But now it's making all-time highs.
Amazing.
So nearly everywhere having a good time. But when everybody's having a good time, historically, it has often led to problems.
Yeah, hangover.
Episode 875, The Awesome Portfolio with Jared Dean.
Well, the awesome portfolio is really the way that you can let your investments compound and grow over time without stress. So let me explain. It is made up of five things: stocks, bonds, cash, gold, and real estate, 20% each. And you rebalance it once a year. The awesome portfolio has returned 8.1% a year with half the volatility of an 80-20 portfolio. And the max drawdown in any year has been 12%, right? So you have this thing that returns 1% less than the stock market. And the worst year you can possibly have is down 12% versus down 38% for the stock market. And you have half the volatility. That is how you let your gains compound over time. The awesome portfolio doesn't cause you stress.
Episode 876, Dead Dollar with Satya Dittdars.
If you look around the world, 96% of trades in the Americas is dollar-based, 74% in Asia-Pacific. And if you look at the rest of the world, it's about 80%. It's only in Europe where the euro obviously dominates. It's less than in first place. About 60% of international foreign loans, etc., are in dollars. And in terms of foreign exchange transaction, if you take the dollar as one side, it's 90%, and 60% of reserves are in US dollars. So that is completely disproportionate to the size of the US, which is about give or take a quarter of the global economy. So it's actually not, if you look at the headline figures, a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that you just made is the crucial point. People will continue to hold dollars, particularly as a reserve currency, if they believe it's going to be a good, safe store of value. And this is where the problem is now getting worse and worse and worse, because the US has completely incontinent fiscal and monetary policies. And what that's done is, as you pointed out, is reduce the long-term purchasing power of the US dollar. And since 1972, against gold, it's fallen by 99%. And if you just take what you're talking about, real things like houses, goods and services, it's fallen by 90%.
Episode 877, Opportunities Await with Richard Smith.
I can have five different positions on that all have, you know, $1,000 exposure.
Okay.
I could lose $1,000 on each of them if they all win against me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way to think about it. But when you have that target exposure, okay, then you can actually start to combine your bets in a way that they actually complement each other in the exposure and reduce your overall volatility. I think the technical term for this might be discounted exposure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of diversification. But basically, if you kind of put together a collection of uncorrelated bets, I can actually have $2,000 of exposure in each bet. But when I combine the five of them together, it's not $10,000 of portfolio exposure. It's actually $5,000 of portfolio exposure. So if you put your bets together using, you know, in an intelligent way, one, you have your exposure target, which is a specific number. But then when you put your bets together and your bets are uncorrelated, you can actually reduce your exposure by half. So you can double your risk.
Episode 878, College Funding Tips with Brad Baldridge.
So if you think about college planning in general, there's a lot of specific tactics and strategies. The challenge is there's so many and only a few of them apply in any particular situation. You know, for example, if I shift this money that is in this account that counts against me into this account over here that doesn't count against me, I will qualify for more financial aid.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes that, you know, a lot of times that's true, or sometimes you'll qualify for more, but you just won't get more. So you really need to understand, you know, when to pull what strategies and what to do. There's obviously tax breaks that are associated with paying for college or saving for college, et cetera, et cetera. If you're in higher tax brackets and are paying a lot of taxes, those strategies can look pretty good. But if you already don't pay taxes, then, you know, those strategies aren't as appealing. So that's, I think, the challenge is there literally are hundreds, and for each family, you know, there's 5 or 10 that are the best.
Episode 879, Tech Wreck with Howard Silverblatt.
The intent of the S&P 500, of the index, is to emulate the U.S. common domestic market, higher end. We are not supposed to beat it. We're not supposed to underperform it. We are supposed to replicate it. And we do that by picking issues. So if semiconductors in the S&P 500 go up 4% and semiconductors in the general market only go up 2%, S&P did not beat the market. We didn't do our job. So we're emulating the market for better and worse. You know, real estate, you know, still in the red so far, yet you have technology up over 30%. And it blends these how is the economy doing? And in general, the economy and the market have done well over decades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Money managers will go in to say, which is NVIDIA? Tomorrow's NVIDIA. Should I bought the small caps the day before the consumer price index came up, before it made that 11% jump?
Right.
You know, that is very hard to do. Only about 15% of the actual money managers beat the index in a given time period.
Episode 880, The Investor's Dilemma with Roger Silk.
If you go back to just after the founding of the United States, and the there were the Jeffersonians and the Hamiltonians,
mm-hmm.
and there was the clash of views when Alexander Hamilton won, and he wanted to set up the first bank of the United States. Right now, this is admittedly history that most people probably learned in school and forgot. But the history that you learn is all about how this was necessary for the good of the country, and it was all sunshine and daylight and roses.
Mm-hmm.
But Catherine and I were going back and actually studying the events. And when you study it and you take away the preconceptions, you come away with a pretty strong idea that actually what Hamilton was doing was, you know, the first instance in the United States, and we're talking 1790, so really right after the founding, is crony capitalism. So what he did was he funded this bank by issuing, so they had a charter, right? They were basically a monopoly bank, and they were going to earn big profits. And I'll give you one guess as to who was able to purchase the shares.
Yeah, of course. He and his family, right?
Well, and his friends, right?
Friends and family, yeah.
And I never learned that in history books.
Episode 881, The Real Deal with Dan Fajella.
There's a piece, if people want to Google it, they can Google, you know, E-M-E-R-J and then just AI zeitgeist. So emerge AI zeitgeist. And we basically break this into three phases, Andrew. So phase one is sort of emergence. Phase two would be adoption. And phase three would be dispersion. Mm-hmm. So emergence, and now, by the way, I'm going to be brutally simplistic here, but bear with me.
Yep.
Emergence is, hey, there's some new possibilities on the horizon. And there's some new interesting ways we can pop this stuff into our workflows. Let's see how it goes. That's emergence. It's just popping on the scene. It hasn't really been tested. We're still guinea pigging everything. And it might work really well in a stupid little startup demo, but it doesn't really work really well inside of Geico or inside of Wells Fargo or inside of GlaxoSmithKline or whatever. That's emergence. Adoption is, you know what? This workflow pretty much permanently can be leveled up, improved. Maybe it involves less headcount. Maybe it just involves more effective humans that are getting twice as much done. This workflow is really a great fit for AI. It mm-hmm. fits its way into our IT structures, fits its way into our workflows for our boots on the ground employees. It's understood as a part of our strategy, and okay, we're using it. That's adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And then dispersion is a phase by which, Andrew, we stop talking about AI because we take for granted that anything technology or IT is AI. We stop making the distinction.
Episode 882, Quick Takes with Anthony Scaramucci.
You are a Bitcoin. Are you a maximalist? Can I say that?
No, you can't actually say that because I own things like Solana. I own some Ethereum. So when someone says they're a Bitcoin maximalist,
okay.
they own Bitcoin. They don't own anything else. They love Bitcoin, and everything else is a shit coin. Bitcoin right. is the only thing. So I do believe these other technologies will catch on, and they will be part of the future of costless transactions going forward. And so I'm 60. Most of my contemporaries don't see it. I've been derided. I got kicked off of the Morgan Stanley platform by going into Bitcoin. Of course, we've since they kicked us off the platform, we've had the best performance in SkyBridge's history, which is ironic, but that's fine. You know, we bought Bitcoin at 17,000. It's 59,000 right now. It did go from 17,000 to 60 plus thousand back to 17,000 on its way to where it is today. And
Episode 883, Options on Commodities with Carly Garner.
The reality is, like, if you look at commodity markets that don't have futures markets attached to them, so they don't have speculators bringing liquidity. Speculators basically bring liquidity to the markets so the hedgers can offset their price risk. So that's their function. If you look at markets, let's say, for example, like olive oil or eggs, you know, markets that don't really have viable futures markets that speculators are participating in, those markets actually are quite a bit more volatile than corn and soybeans. I know it's hard to believe because you look at corn, you see we went from $8 to $3.50, $3.80. And you think that without speculators, that wouldn't have happened. But it's actually not true. If you look at markets that don't have speculators, it's even worse when it comes to volatility. But I'll also say I will agree 100% that speculators will, in the short run, push prices beyond where they might have gone without all the speculative frenzy.
Episode 884, Dressing Up Your Portfolio with Brian Bess.
So from my old world, turning a trade into an investment is something that people do often, which is terrible. Don't do that.
Can you expound on that with it? Because I know what you mean.
Yeah, so it's funny. I don't trade anymore. But what people sometimes do is they'll say, oh, okay, I want to make a quick buck buying XYZ or selling it. And it goes against them over a course of a week or a couple of weeks or whatever. And then it just stays in their portfolio. So that's turning a trade.
So you went from renting to owning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Without making an actual decision.
Mm-hmm.
I'll definitely.
Well, the decision would be, here's the decision. Let me just throw this out. This is the same thing about people who are out of the market, right? That can't get in because they're waiting for the dip, but they never do. The decision is this. If it went up, they were right and they're going to stick with it. If it goes down, they're wrong, they're going to stick with it. Right? You follow what I'm saying? That's kind of the duplicity of this decision, which is just really singularly, we're just going to stick with it.
Yes. That's called lying to yourself.
Episode 886, What Comes Next with Frank Curzio.
What's the next? I think it feels like everybody's looking for the next catalyst.
You're looking for the next catalyst, but I have to say, from my experience covering these markets for decades, when people are talking, I mean, you could talk about how many risks. Holy cow. I mean, we could spend probably 10 minutes talking about the risk, whether it's geopolitical, whether it's the wars, whether it's, you know, the high debt, whether it's, hey, stocks are more expensive than ever. You know, I mean, you can go on and on and on. You're the banking system now, just recently with a couple of bad comments. Are we worried about that? The carry trade, I mean, I could go on here, but when you look at some of these risks and you're talking about them, that usually means that they're priced in. Everybody knows about them. So I don't know what's going to happen in September. We may see a pullback, and I think we're a little bit high in terms of valuation because you're going to see government spending start tailing off. And when I say tailing off, we know the government's going to continue to spend no matter what, right? Both parties, mm-hmm. no matter who gets elected. The thing is, what we have with COVID was different than any other time why we saw massive inflation because they decided to hand checks directly to people, directly to businesses.
Right, yeah, direct.
Right, so they're not really doing that right now, right? They're like leaving some debt here or whatever. It's not going like direct. They're not handing a free check to you and saying, hey, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay us off forever.
Episode 887, Mega Futures with Steve Sanders.
It's always been our policy, if there's an exchange out there with liquidity, we're gonna add it because we just want everything. that's kind of who we are. So, you know, Malaysia was a market where there was some liquidity and we recently added in those futures. We probably have almost everything, but if there is a missing market, you know, that, as I said, it has liquidity and it's a fair place to trade, then we're probably going to try to build it in. From the client side, you know, it's kind of like Field of Dreams. We built out our universal account that allows you to deposit funds in a myriad of currencies. We advertise we're there, and we hope that they'll come from, you know, all over the world, which is over 200 countries and territories where our clients now come from.
Episode 888, Bullish Theory with Manuel Blay.
Earnings really have no bearing with future performance. Huh. What? No, nothing at all. Furthermore, there is some counterintuitive result. So maybe when earnings drop a lot, then it is likely that you are buying a bottom, and then you're going to get better performance next year, which makes sense. So let's imagine there is a recession. So the end of the world is nigh. And then, of course, earnings are, you know, like the Great Recession, whatever, minus 40% earnings. Then is the time to buy, because the stock market is really depressed, because it is anticipating the same dire conditions for the future. So, okay, earnings, but present earnings really don't predict anything. On the other hand, what predicts something is the earnings trends revision. So if revisions are going up, this is bullish. But in itself is not the best time indicator, but it gives you a bullish bottom.
Episode 889, Bearishness Reasoned with Tim Knight.
My contention here is that the relationship between precious metals and equities speaks volumes about what I think is to come. And in a nutshell, I am and have been very bullish on precious metals, and gold in particular. And conversely, I am bearish on equities. So we'll begin with gold. The first chart is the one, and all these have watermarks on them. So the watermark is GC/UUP. And this chart goes back to 07. And it's what they call a ratio chart. And all it is the continuous contract of gold futures divided by the US dollar index. And as can be seen, back in 2011, 2012, 2013, there's that pink topping zone. Mm-hmm. And so things fell. And then for years, we have that green base right there. And it pushed it higher. And then more recently, from about 2020 to now, we had beneath that dash green line a nice base form, and it's shooting up. And so what it shows, this is not a projection, this is reality. What it shows is that gold is vastly outperforming the US dollar.
Episode 890, The Briefing with Patrick O'Hare.
You've got all of these news items out there in the public that would seemingly suggest that you should have a much more challenging market environment, you know, whether it's stuff going on, you know, in the Middle East, Russia-Ukraine war, you know, China's economic slowdown, you know, the extended period of, you know, high inflation, higher interest rates here in the U.S. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, that you could point to. But the one thing that resonates probably above all and maybe might help explain the resilience of the market are profits, right? You've continued to have solid earnings growth. And you continue to see enough economic evidence, notwithstanding these anecdotal reports referenced earlier that suggest there's some, you know, troubles starting to percolate in that consumer class. The economic data itself is not scaring anybody yet.
Episode 891, A Tax in Development with Dan Piller.
Every kind of a tax that's imposed on any transaction you can name causes distortions in the marketplace, all right? A distortion in the marketplace is something that causes somebody to do something they otherwise wouldn't do, or prevents somebody from doing something they would otherwise be disposed right. to do. That's right. a distortion. Right. We want a tax system, Andrew, that creates or introduces the fewest amount of distortions into the marketplace so people can buy and sell based on business decisions, right? Based on personal decisions that they make, business decisions they make based on what's best for me and my family, what's best for my business. We don't want people making decisions based solely on tax consequences. And that's all these proposals would do is create a whole body of decisions that are made based on tax consequences, not based on economic realities. That's not a good thing.
Episode 892, Inflation Realities with Ed Easterling.
The report that we see in the headlines is the year-over-year inflation rate. So the next report that comes out will be October's inflation compared to where it was a year ago. And inside of that, there are the monthly inflation reports. Those are kind of buried down in the footnotes. And that's the inflation rate month over month. The big picture is, for the listeners, the fourth quarter of last year, 2023, had deflation. Every month was negative on inflation. And the year-over-year rate is effectively the cumulative effect of all the months. So as we get each report in the next quarter, each month that shows a positive inflation is going to be dropping off a negative number and adding a positive number. Or if it just adds, if it has a negative number, if the number is less negative than it was a year ago, inflation's still going up. So the effect of that is that by year end, we could see a number over at or over 3% on the inflation rate.
Episode 893, Fallacy of Composition with David Selim.
When you have billions, almost trillions, literally, of dollars of dry powder waiting to be put to work by private equity managers who amassed or accumulated those commitments from their generally institutional limited partners because those institutions were looking in the rearview mirror in 2017, 18, 19, 20, right through 21, saying private equity and the subset of it called venture capital is the superior way to compound wealth. I think I'll pile billions into it. And they all did so, you know, generating a great example of what we call, of course, the fallacy of composition. If you and I decide, oh, we're going to sneak through that, you know, the exit door of the crowded theater, it's great if there's just one or two of us try to get through it. But if everybody tries to get through it at the same time, fallacy of composition, they won't achieve their stated aims. And that's been the case with private equity here quite recently. We can go back through the history of institutional investing back to the dawn of my career and identify numerous instances where what I've just described has happened, to the great lament and regret of the people moving money in the direction of what they thought were going to be very, very, you know, plentiful pastures.
Episode 894, The Big Three E's with Tom Nelson.
Really, while there are no free lunches in finance, diversification is about as close as you can get, right? Investing across asset classes can generally produce a smoother return stream through reduced risk without sacrificing equivalent levels of expected returns, right? And that stability should help investors to sleep well at night. And over the long term, you'll generally be able to have a portfolio that endures. And you listed a number of the different strategies that I'm involved in. And for example, the Franklin Moderate Allocation Fund, this isn't a, you know, this isn't a product pitch or anything, but just an example of a strategy that the strategy has been around since 1996. So just about 28 years. And over that 28 year period, and this is indicative of many funds of this ilk, it's delivered 88% of the returns of stocks with 65% of the risk.
Episode 895, The Accommodation Loser with Kerry Lutz.
There was a guy named Harry Brown. He was an economist. He wrote books, and he called government the accommodating loser. It's like when everyone's on the bad side of the trade, the government comes in to bail them out, right? When the government acts to reinforce a currency, they're the accommodating loser because they're buying up somebody that nobody else wants, right? So they're the accommodating loser. So how do you make money from the accommodating loser? The government loves for you to make money on real estate and for them to lose money, right?
Yeah.
I mean, tax-advantaged investing is playing off the government being an accommodating loser. The other way that you make money from the government's stupidity is, okay, you guys, you're going to pump up the money supply. We got $10 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet. Inflation, as far as the eye can see. How about if I buy stocks and companies that are going to benefit from inflation and benefit from AI? You know who's benefiting like the most from AI now besides NVIDIA?
Who?
It's utilities.
Episode 896, Best Ops for 2025 with Frank Curzio.
Yeah, for stocks, opportunities, definitely a yes. Absolutely. You got to be careful. And this is the time to listen to people who know that they're talking about, where in the past, it wasn't really like that. We just buy any stock in any sector, you'll be fine. The market's going higher. It's different. You're seeing the difference, especially in semiconductors, right? You're seeing some of these names, some of them getting annihilated, and others who really focus on AI and are actually not just saying they benefit from AI and are benefiting. Like, you know, I still look at AMD. AMD is not an AI play. Right?
I love that you brought that up.
It's going to be an AI play where maybe. Now for the first time, and we told people to avoid this for a while, and I'm glad they did for the last year and a half because it was trading, you know, well over 200. You know, it's now, it was 50% of their revenue came from two divisions, which were horrible. They were down like 26%, something like whatever.
They recently did a layoff of a bunch of employees.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of technology companies have, if you look at the last 18 months or 2 years, I mean,
yeah, but you wouldn't expect AMD, which is supposedly going to be the competition NVIDIA that is, you know, roaring and all this with the AI, to be laying off people. That just doesn't fit with what the, you know, the notion of an AI company that's rocking.
Episode 897, Fiscal Sisyphus with Jonathan Peterson.
I think one interesting concept, you know, we were kind of, using the term a fiscal Sisyphus. And Sisyphus is that mythological character who kept rolling the boulder up the hill. And we use that image to kind of describe the government sort of, you know, really supporting the economy, right? That it's the character Sisyphus of every time there was a little bit of a slowdown or, you know, interest rate shock hit the housing sector and things like that, government spending was kind of to the rescue, right?
Yeah.
And it is a major source of support for this economy, and something that, you know, as the government runs a large deficit, it enables the private sector, namely corporates and households, to be able to run surpluses and support their spending and their profits and things like that. So it's definitely been a key ingredient of a post-COVID economy. And I think it's going to be one to watch for sure when it comes to that fiscal impulse and, yeah, just what Trump's policies might mean for that. So
Episode 898, The Robots Are Coming with John Pugliano.
Blue collar workers, whatever you want to call them, you know, the workforce is no longer here.
No, there is no part of that, because nobody wants to do it. They don't want to do it. Who wants to work for $3 an hour? No air conditioning and no benefits. I'll tell you people in China and Vietnam.
Exactly. And again, I think that's where the automation comes in, though. These factories are not going to be filled with people. They're going to be filled with machines and robots and different types of automation that are still going to need tended to by human beings.
Exactly.
And so again, that's where I think these jobs are going to be replaced.
Yeah.
But a lot of these jobs are going to be replaced in Asia, coming back to the United States, as well as the mid-level managers in the US. We won't need as many of them, but we'll still need skill. Lynn, if you can crack a bead with an arc welder, you can get employed now, and you're not going to be working in a factory making cars. Because they replaced those welders 30 years ago with robotics. But if you're going to do a pipeline or you know, any type of infrastructure, pretty much you need a welder on site. Automation works great for things that are routine and predictable. But when a lightning strike, you know, hits some power supply in a mountain in Utah, you need to get a human out there and fix it.
How great was that? I mean, that parade of guests this year. And again, thanks to Ryan Radisky for putting that together, was just awesome. I can listen to that over and over again. Always helps to understand, again, where we've come to where we're going, to make sure that we know exactly that roadmap for our future. Well, next week, we're going to get back to some basics where we talk about the things that are important, some things that maybe sometimes are considered mundane, but yet we're going to get in focus with taxes and how to make sure that you are getting your best after-tax rate of return with our guest, Pat Camuso. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.